Hi, and welcome to the Bylines Network podcast. Each week, our team of citizen journalists speak to politicians, leaders, and activists from across the country, putting the spotlight on voices outside of the mainstream. I'm your host for this week. I'm Mo Kanjalal, and I'm in Brighton, and I'm part of the Sussex Bylines team, and I'm a diversity and inclusion consultant, as well as a volunteer for the Bylines Network. And I'm absolutely delighted to introduce Stephanie Pryor, who is a business development and marketing manager for a law firm. And she's also a standing invitee at the local council here. So Stephanie, I'll hand over to you and let you introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mo. Thank you for having me here today. Yes, as you mentioned, I'm a business development and marketing manager for an international law firm based in Brighton and London. I've been working in marketing now for around 10 years. But as you mentioned, I was recently appointed as a standing invitee for the Tech Committee at Brighton Hove City Council. Tech stands for Tourism, Equality, Culture and Community. And I'm a standing invitee who sits on that committee. I wasn't elected in, so I don't get the opportunity to vote, but nevertheless, it's a great opportunity for me to share my experiences, opinions, and have a say, and also add some diversity into our local politics.
Great subject, which is a nice introduction to what we're going to talk about, because you're adding much needed diversity of your experiences, your life, and you as a person to our local council. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to talk about representation in politics. And by that, we don't just mean Westminster, we mean local politics as well, because a lot of things that affect people's lives happen locally in local councils, and about the barriers that are there for people to enter into politics and what we can do about that. And if we can come on to that, whether we have thoughts about what we can do about that. And I guess where I start with on this is around local councils, because local government is where things start, and it's often where people start to get their experience as well to then stand for office in Westminster. And the problem that I see with it is it's not funded, so that there isn't a living wage from being an elected councillor, for example. And so it means that it's not accessible to everyone, and that you don't get people from a diverse range of backgrounds who can do that, because simply they need to pay the bills, and it's not something that everybody can do. And I think without changing that, we're going to struggle to change the face of local politics and change what happens there. So interested to hear what you think about that.
I think you're right. I've always been interested in politics. I studied it at college, and then I went on to university to study anthropology. And at the time, I studied anthropology because I knew I had an interest in representation and culture. But coming from a working class background and not really knowing anyone from a political background or a legal background, I struggled as a young person to see how I would be able to enter into those fields. So I picked a subject that was quite vague and would allow me to make the most of that, I suppose, and sell it how I see fit when going into job interviews or considering various opportunities. And I remember as a youngster getting involved in various campaigns and being very passionate about potentially having a career in politics. But as you get older, it feels like, well, there are various barriers that prevent us from gaining work experience or having the right contacts that would allow us to really consider that as a career opportunity. And touching on career opportunity, I mean, is politics at local level a career opportunity for young people? From my understanding, councillors receive a pay of around £13,000 per annum. Now, Brighton and Hove, for example, is a very prestigious city. It costs around, for example, £750 to £900 for a studio. And in certain circumstances, you're going to be paying bills on top of that. And I think for a young professional to really consider how they could survive on a salary of £13,000 a year would be difficult. Obviously, there are, you know, jobs available that you could work part-time that would allow you to consider such opportunities. But nevertheless, I think that this in itself is quite difficult and could probably do with some reviewing. For example, if we were to look into young professionals that have had the opportunity to gain representation in local politics, it'd be interesting to explore the part-time roles that they are working on. Who are these institutions that are supporting them? Is it within their interest to support them at local politics level? Do they benefit from that representative being in local politics? And are these institutions diverse themselves? You know, how much access do people like myself get to have the opportunity to network with politicians and be considered for electoral roles?
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing. So I think it's, yeah, the pay that you get and what you can do around that to support yourself. And I think there are limits on which employers would support that and offer you part-time, for example, to fit around it. There's the fact that from what I see, the role of a councillor is incredibly long hours, so well into the evening. In fact, I dialed into a Brighton and Hove Council meeting yesterday, didn't stay for all of it. It went on to, I think, 10:30 at night. That's already putting a lot of things in people's way. So, for example, young parents, that's a tough thing to consider if you're going to have to be working that late in the night at meetings. So I think there's a lot of things that could do with a real look at and an overhaul to understand how accessible they are. And then I don't know about you, it's something that people have asked me before, whether I've considered standing as a councillor. And I've said, you know, there are some things that would put me off politics generally, and I'd include local politics in that. The first is I'm not sure how comfortable I'd be knocking on doors. You know, I don't know how welcomed I'd be at some homes. I'm just being really honest there. I don't know how comfortable I would feel going on my own and knocking on doors. And then, I mean, I don't know whether local councillors are subject to as much of it as Westminster politicians, but online abuse, you know, how much you'd face online from people as well. I just think it's something that makes me think, well, I don't know if I want to put myself forward for that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of responsibility that comes with taking on a political role such as a councillor, and a lot of pressure. And I would imagine that it requires a lot of support. I'm only voluntary as a standing invitee, but nevertheless, working alongside my full-time job, I have committed to very long meetings in the evening. The last tech committee meeting went on for 6 hours. So after work, I attended this and didn't finish until 11 p.m. at night, which is very, very long hours. And as you mentioned, it is a lot of work. With regards to representation and feeling comfortable to put yourself out there, I think I'm sure that probably all councillors may be slightly nervous to knock on one's door and promote themselves. But I know what you mean. If you mean in terms of there's a lack of diversity and maybe ideologies in which people would expect a councillor to look like, I know what you mean about that. I remember when I competed in beauty pageants and I won the title of Miss Sussex, and I was the first Black beauty queen. And I remember sharing my picture with the Argus and attending various events. And between me and you, Mo, I remember thinking to myself, will people be shocked at how I look? Because I didn't necessarily reflect the commercial ideology of a beauty queen or what was beautiful at the time. But nevertheless, I personally wouldn't encourage anybody to focus on that. At the end of the day, it's about how good you are at your role, how good you are representing your own opinions, experiences, as well as others, the work that you've done in the community. And I think if you're really good at all of these aspects, you don't have anything to worry about when you're knocking on people's doors. But nevertheless, I think it would be good, definitely, to have support from institutions like the council to support people like myself when we are putting ourselves out there on social media, or if we were potentially campaigning to be the next councillor, in terms of how best to deal with any negative comments that may come off the back of something quite new, really, I suppose.
Yeah, and there are, you know, there are some organisations that offer support in that. I don't know if you've heard of Glitch. They're quite good at offering support to protect yourself online. They're a charity that could help with that. But yeah, I agree, there needs to be more support for people. Got to say, I love the fact that you said between me and you when we're recording a podcast.
Well, you know.
Yeah, so if we talk about, you know, your role in the council and kind of the work you're doing, it's much needed to have different people involved in our council, because in lots of ways we have different kinds of people involved in Brighton and Hove. There are quite a lot of young councillors, but there are perspectives missing in our local politics. So it'd be interesting to hear more about kind of things you've been getting involved in since you took on the role of standing invitee.
Sure. Well, I've been getting on with a lot. So initially, my role as a standing invitee is to attend the tech committee meetings and share my views, opinions and experiences. But really and truly, in order for me to attend committee meetings and to be able to engage with the, you know, with what's being discussed in the agenda, to represent the thoughts of others, and maybe even to comment on things that are not necessarily personal to myself or relative to myself, but are important to the local community, I think more work has to be done outside of just attending the tech committee meetings. I mean, the meetings themselves are very long. They're 6 hours long. I've attended three so far, and on each three, there's been at least 5 items on the agenda. So each meeting has gone on for at least 4 hours, 4 to 6 hours. And in order for me to have a say as much as possible and be heard and be seen, I really need to be able to comment on as much of the agenda items as possible. So off the back of that, I've attended various community engagement groups. I'm meeting with the police. I've been meeting with other members of committees just to get more of an insight really into how I can contribute towards the bigger debate and also support change that we wish to see in our local community. As I'm the only woman of African Caribbean heritage to have a seat at a committee for Brighton Hove City Council, I've also had a lot of interest within my role, and a lot of members of the community reach out to me for various things that don't even necessarily sit within my committee, such as funding or various support with charitable initiatives. So I think that in itself highlights that there is a real requirement for us to diversify local politics, provide more representation so that more members of our community feel confident and trust the local institutions and, you know, feel confident to communicate and reflect their issues and what they would like to see changed or what they would like to contribute towards. So yeah, I think it's a huge initiative. I mean, the anti-racist pledge in itself had a lot of items added to that. And me as a standing invitee, you know, there's only so much that I can do with that particular role. So it is essential that I work with community members, businesses, and other committees and groups outside of what I'm doing really to really take advantage of the opportunity.
Yeah, and the anti-racist pledge that Brighton and Hove Council have taken is unusual, I think. I don't think there's many councils that have taken that step. And they put information out about it and have a programme around it. So, yeah, it's about how that gets progressed and your role within that. Because, as you say, you're in one committee and on limited time. So I think that's where it's about how there can be wider representation for more people to be involved and actually for the makeup of the council to become more diverse. So I think going back to our original point about diversity in politics, I think it's probably about looking at all of those things, you know, not just here, across country, how it can be opened up so that more people can get involved.
I was just going to say, on top of pay, I actually think there are other barriers as well that we can consider in order to open up more opportunities into local or even national politics. I think one of the barriers, personally, is language. I think many people can be intimidated by the language that is used in political debates and discussions. I personally have found it sometimes slightly intimidating. It brings me back, actually, to my university times. I remember when I first attended Goldsmiths University in London, which was a very good university, listening to lecturers and various pupils around me discuss various ethnographies and debates with regards to anthropology. And there were times when I didn't necessarily understand the arguments that were being presented, because there was language being used that I hadn't used in the curriculum or even in, you know, my own personal life. But nevertheless, you know, I stuck at it. And the more you read, the more you learn, the more you, you know, engage with different people, the more we take on, you know, as individuals. And, you know, I managed to pass university. And I think it's a similar thing with local politics. It's not impossible to engage with councillors. It's not impossible to learn the lingo either. But nevertheless, I think we do have to acknowledge that there are barriers and these political structures are rather traditional and old. And in order to encourage more working people or even mothers, working mothers or young persons, maybe we need to review sometimes either the language, or we need to encourage people like myself to understand and learn that language more so that we can put forward stronger arguments and maybe even be taken more seriously in political platforms.
Yeah, I think that's where I am with it as well. I think that all of the structures need looking at, because they're all structures that have been in place for, you know, a long time and don't suit the world we're in. And I think that to really diversify local politics, there needs to be a change in all that. And, you know, I'm sure you think similar to me that as a business person, I see some of those long meetings. And I think, you know, I don't know how they can sit through that long a meeting. You know, my attention span struggles with that length of meeting. And I'm more used to business meetings where it's got to be to the point and you deliver on results. And I wonder if that actually the whole structure just needs looking at and changing so that it's more accessible to different kinds of people. And as you say, language as well. I'm the same. I listen to those meetings and I don't understand what everything means because there's terminology and things that are put in place. And, you know, does the whole, where I am is, I think the whole thing needs an overhaul, because actually change and changing society starts locally. There's so much locally that needs to change, as well as nationally, you know, national policies and things. But so many things that affect everyday lives are local. So I think there's a lot of work to do there.
Definitely. I think really we need to see change from the top. I think this would really create the ripple effect that we would like to see. Watching what happened with the US elections, and, you know, it's obviously, you know, very early times now, but it's been interesting to see their newly elected president change the structure and introduce new faces to politics and really diversify the political platform. And I really hope that what we see in the United States is that they really benefit from that. If that does happen, I do think that that will encourage change globally. But nevertheless, I do think we need to think about what's taking place in our own, you know, national political arenas. And I feel that when our local government isn't supporting or isn't being seen to communicate support for initiatives such as anti-racism, it doesn't help people like myself working on a more local level to encourage the local community that this is the way that we should be moving forward as a society.
Yeah, for sure. And the US example is interesting because obviously in Georgia, Stacey Abrams and the campaign that they ran to get people to register to vote and turn out was instrumental in them getting people elected and actually flipping that state. And I think there's a lot we can learn from that model of local government and of getting people out to vote. Because I think as well, a lot of people probably don't see the point in voting or don't turn out or don't think anything's going to change. So I think that model that they use there to, it's the Fair Fight group that they set up, and they had a system of, you know, going to where the voters are, so to places where there's low turnout, and talking to people and engaging with them. You know, it wasn't a short-term project, it was long-term, talking to people in these communities and showing them why they had to turn out and vote, and that they had the power to make a difference. And that's why, I mean, I'm sure you felt the same when you saw their results. It was just so emotional to see that all these people that had worked so hard got the result, and they actually, their votes counted, and they actually made a difference. So I think we've got a lot to learn from that here, that example of how they did that locally.
There's still a long way to go in terms of Brighton and Hove's anti-racist pledge anyway, and I think there's a lot we can learn from reviewing what's going on overseas and continuing to review that as well.
Yeah, for sure. And then if we sort of, we've talked about local politics there, and you know, I can't help but think about national politics as well, and Westminster and the national government and all of those things as well. And you know, there is some diversity in MPs, but there's so far to go and so many things that need to change. And, you know, so many aspects of that. Again, it's steeped in tradition and language and all of those things. So yeah, I just wonder what your thoughts are on Westminster.
Westminster, at the moment, I would say you're right. So we increasingly see more women. We see more people of colour entering into Westminster, which is brilliant. But then at the same time, we also see maybe a lack of differentiation in the political parties, which I believe is a current issue at the moment. So I think it would be good for the political parties maybe to reconsider what it is they represent, maybe one party more so than the other, without trying to, you know, come across as biased or anything. And I do think the work that we do on a local level will support more MPs entering into Parliament. So I think it takes collaborations with the top and the bottom. There's a long way to go at the top. Really, that's a big question, Mo. I'm not even sure where to start. But yeah, I feel that we can see changes, but nevertheless, it would be good to see more diversity in Parliament and more voices. I mean, the Conservative Party, for example, you know, they're very keen to promote that they have people of colour sitting on their cabinet. But are those people representative of the communities that would identify with those people? Does there need to be more voices from a range of communities? And should we have different people of colour coming from different political and points of view? I think that could be quite healthy. So it's just, I think, you know, seeing diversity in both political parties, I suppose, with a range of views, and seeing support from the top to encourage that at local level, and hopefully seeing more young people or even women going for MP and seeing where that takes them in Parliament and how successful they are there.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And it's great, there are some examples, but I know the examples of people because there are so few. And actually, when you look at the vast range of MPs, then they don't represent the people that they're representing in lots of cases. So, you know, a millionaire is going to struggle to represent somebody living on universal credit, for example, because they've never had experience of that to understand their lives. And so I think it's about the diversity in all different aspects, so many aspects, that will change politics if we can enable more people to stand for Parliament, so that they're supposed to be representatives of the people. And I think that's what we need to see, is that they are actually representing the people. And, you know, going back to our start of our discussion about local politics, I agree. I think it starts there, because that's often where people get their experience, within local politics, and get engaged. And yeah, it'd be great to see more young people actually getting really involved. And I think you do see it, because, for example, with the Extinction Rebellion protests and Black Lives Matter protests, there are a lot of young people who are the ones turning out to actually protest, so they're the ones that are engaged in it. So hopefully we will start to see changes in that.
Definitely, I think young people have definitely led in terms of, you know, environmental protesting and the Black Lives Matter protest. Mm. And it's been really refreshing and interesting to see. When I attended Brighton Black Lives Matter protest, I saw connections of mine who were there with their children, and they said, you know, I support equality, I support Black Lives Matter, but if it wasn't for my child saying, you need to be here, Dad, or you need to be here, Mum, this is really important, I wouldn't be here. And it was really encouraging to see, you know, the older generation really embracing the opinions, thoughts and ideas of the younger generation and believing in them and what they believe in. I think that's really important. And, you know, we've seen young people make some significant changes in the political landscape from an outside perspective. So it'd be great to see more accessibility into local politics and to see what amazing things they could do in the political arena.
Yeah, it'd be great for it to be seen as a career choice that people can really think about doing, and then we'll start to see changes in how things are done.
Definitely, yes. 100%. And it would be nice to see it in other institutions as well. The police, for example, have come under a lot of criticism within the last couple of weeks. And I know that there are a range of police officers that are very good people, and they go into that role with extremely well and good intentions. But I think the issue with the police force, in terms of some of the criticisms that have come from them not taking complaints from women with regards to violence seriously, again, it comes from, you know, a traditional institution that has been run in a certain way by certain people. And can we really expect those people who have worked in a certain way under a certain ideology for such a long time to really change? Like, I really think that that's where the issue lies sometimes, is actually changing the opinions and ideas, or even the people running the game, in order for everything else at the bottom to change. Everybody who works, you know, in any institution, whether it's the police or politicians, we need to look up to our leaders and believe in what they're saying. So it would be good to see a range of institutions leading from the top, leading on modern initiatives, and seeing that filtered down.
Definitely. And I think that's a great note to end on. So thank you so much, Stephanie. That was fantastic. Really, really insightful to speak to you. And thanks for sparing the time to talk to me today. And this has been the latest episode of the Bylines Network podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, email editor@sussexbylines.co.uk, or you can reach out to us on Twitter. We're @SussexBylines. And I've been your host. I'm Mo Candelar, one of the Sussex Bylines team. And our music was Vauxhall Revolution by Kevin McLeod. Thanks for listening.